Last time we were talking about critical phenomena, and I tried to motivate why it would be great to know the exact values of conformal dimensions of fields, like or scaling dimensions of fields, because if you know scaling dimensions, we can extract all the critical exponents, and we will also discuss it more on a tutorial tomorrow. Yeah, so the conformal transformations, as you probably remember, are characterized by the way how the metric transforms under this kind of coordinate transformation. Yeah, so under coordinate transformation, the Minkowski metric, and in the following I will be working in Euclid signature. So Euclid metric have to transform just up by scaling factor. And in higher dimensions, we remember that in Laurent signature, it gives us, like for d greater than 2, it gives us SO to d. And this is in Laurent, and in Euclid, it would be like SO 1 d plus 1, which is a very similar group. But in 2D, apparently, there are more solutions to this equation. So in infinitesimal form, if you say that x prime equals like x prime mu equals to x mu plus epsilon mu of x, we get an equation that d mu epsilon mu plus d nu epsilon mu equals to 2 omega times eta mu nu. And yeah, taking trace of both sides, we got, yeah, probably there should be 2 here. Yeah, we got that d mu epsilon mu equals to 2 omega. And this is, yeah, I'm talking about 2D now. Yeah, so let's write down these equations and components. So, for example, let mu and nu be equal to 1. This gives us d1 epsilon 1 plus basically 2d1 epsilon 1 equals to, this is just 1. So I assume my metric to be like 1, 0, 0, 1. So I'm working in Euclid signature. So here I get d1 epsilon 1 plus d2 epsilon 2. And by canceling this with that, I'm getting d1 epsilon 1 minus d2 epsilon 2 equals to 0. If mu is equals to one, mu equals 1 and nu equals 2, I get on the left hand side, basically I don't get anything because, oh sorry, on the left hand side I get d1 epsilon 2 plus d2 epsilon 1, and on the right hand side I don't get anything, so I get condition like this. And yeah, as Jaume mentioned, or someone of you noticed, I don't remember. This is exactly Cauchy-Riemann conditions for holomorphic function. So if we compose function, like let's say that z is coordinate on a complex plane, just x1 plus I x2, and we also complexify epsilon, so we say epsilon is like epsilon 1 plus I epsilon 2. It's easy exercise to check that these two conditions are equivalent to condition that d epsilon over d z bar equals to 0, which means that if you have two coordinates like z and z bar, and epsilon depends on both of them, then dependence on z bar is trivial. So it depends only on z. Okay, and now, I will give you small cheat sheet with formulas with complex coordinates, which might be useful for you in the following. So, probably. So d over dz equals to 1/2 dx1 minus like this. Yeah, these formulas are very useful, and in the following, when we will consider like examples of series like free boson and free fermion, we will need this kind of transformations, so it will be helpful for us. Another good formula is that metric. It transforms as like this, basically. So if you encounter metric in complex coordinates, then the metric tensor is with lower indices. It's 0, 1/2, 1/2, 0. So it's non-diagonal, and it will be important for us in the following, because we will be like rising and lowering indices. So when we are rising or lowering z index, we are getting z bar index, and it's a good place to make a mistake. So just keep notices. And another important formula is that when we have dx zero wedge dx one. This is equal to I over 2 dz wedge dz bar. And this means that if you have skew symmetric tensor, its form is 0 e over 2 minus e over 2 0. So this is it. Important remark. Most of conformal transformations. Into D are not invertible. And the reason for that is the following. So most of transformations are not one-to-one. They are not like isomorphisms of complex plane or extended complex plane, which is like complex plane with point at infinity onto itself. In most cases, for each point, we have some like not one preimage of the point. So I will be using in the following often notation CP1, which is C and point to infinity. And it's very convenient in like in conformal theory in 2D, and in general when you're dealing like with complex geometry of curves, to also consider infinitely like the point which is at infinity at the complex plane, because for example when we apply inversion with E, which is like, which maps Z to 1 over Z bar in two-dimensional case. So when you apply inversion, your 0 goes to infinity and infinity goes to 0. So it's much better to keep track of this of point at infinity because it's like actually point which takes part in all the things. So the only transformations which are invertible are transformations of the form f of z equals to az plus b divided by cz plus d. And since this is defined up to a common scaling factor, so we can multiply AB times something and C and D times something, and it doesn't change the mapping, we can just, to fix this ambiguity, we can say that AD minus BC have to be equal to 1. I can motivate, or this is like a sketch of proof why those are only mappings which are global, which means that they're one-to-one on the whole CP1. So first of all, like let's say f of z is like some like sketch of proof. Like if f of z is some function, analytic function, then it cannot have branch cuts and it cannot have essentially singular points, because in both cases one-to-one mapping will be broken, because around the essentially singular point the neighborhood is mapped to entire C, so only neighborhood, and when we go outside of neighborhood we have like extra pre-images. And if you have branch cut also, clearly this is not one-to-one mapping place. So basically the only form which we can have is f is some polynomial p of z divided by some polynomial q of z. But again, like imagine that p of z, degree of p of z is greater than 1. If degree of p of z is greater than 1, it means that there are like a couple of zeros. And if you have like p of z1 equals p of z2 equals 0, it means that 0 have two preimages, at least two preimages, z1 and z2. And again, we don't want it to have numerous preimages, which means that the degree of p can only be 1. And if two zeros of p coincide, so if p is like z minus something in some power, it's also easy to check that in a neighborhood there is not one-to-one mapping. And the same applicable to Q, so degree of Q is also equal to 1. And yeah, this provides us with this form. This group is it plays very special role in conformal theories. So it's called group of like global conformal transformations. And it's probably this constraint which I imposed, it might be suggestive, and it's very natural to write down matrix which looks like A, B, C, D. And it's good exercise. That composition of F and G is the same as multiplication of corresponding matrices. So if we, for mapping F and for mapping G, we write down these matrices and we take composition of the mappings, we get another mapping of the same form, which is very easy to see that, like, if Z is replaced by some function of this form and Z in the denominator got replaced by some function of this form, we also are getting function of the same form. So global conformal transformations are indeed form a group. But also the parameters will be just like multiplied, like multiplication of matrices. Yes, and therefore it's very easy to see that a group of conformal transformations is SO2C, which is by definition group of complex 2x2 matrices with determinant equal to 1. Okay, and also notice that this group, it's isomorphic, as you probably know from course in quantum field theory, this group is isomorphic to SO13, and this is consistent with what we had before. So in higher dimensions, group of conformal transformations was SO1D+1. And subgroup of global transformations in D equals to 1 is SO13. So we have like perfect matching of global conformal transformations in 2D and all conformal transformations in higher dimensions. But we have more. We also have all the analytic functions which are like non-single valued and which are good as symmetries of the theory as long as we apply them infinitesimally. And we will only consider all other symmetries and as infinitesimal symmetries, but never like as a global symmetries of like as a group, only as a Lie algebra, which is like important point. Okay, and yeah, and probably the last remark in this block. I can put it here. We will often treat Z and Z bar as independent variables. So we will be complexifying our space. When we will be performing physical computations, we will be restricting ourselves to a real plane when Z complex conjugated is equal to Z bar. Okay, questions on what was happening so far? Is it like everything is clear or everything isn't clear? Okay, clear. Good. Yeah?
You said you only apply the local transformations, the transformations that are not variable, only locally.
Yes.
Is there some sort of like global consistency condition, or can I apply any local transformation, like local transformation 1 on region 1, local transformation 2 on region 2, without worries about?
So by local, I more mean that we are not going to consider them locally, but like I'm only consider infinitesimal transformations, which do not send point far away of from its origin. So I will only deal with symmetries in infinitesimally. That's more what I meant by local. Yeah, and in general, we cannot like apply different transformations in different regions at the same time. It would be not like conformal transformation. So like I would phrase it that like transformation infinitesimally transformation is locally everywhere, but it's local in a sense that it doesn't send point far away from its origin. Okay, now like generators of algebra of transformations. Also, Jaume mentioned this. and it will be important in the following. They are given by homomorphic and anti-homomorphic vector fields. So ln is minus z to n plus 1 d over dz, and ln bar is minus z to bar to n plus 1 d over dz bar to n plus 1. And here I already use the fact that we treat this as independent coordinates, so we can consider this as independent vector fields. And the commutation relations between these generators are ln lm bar equals to n minus m times ln plus m, ln lm bar are commuting, and for lm bar, ln bar lm bar, we have commutation relations similar to those which we have for ln and lm. So each copy, so there are like two copies of the same algebra for homomorphic vector fields and for anti-homomorphic vector fields. And each of these algebras are is called Witt algebra.
Your first line of algebra, you have an extra bar.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yes, thank you. Yes, you're right. Yeah, this is called Witt algebra. So basically, the whole algebra of symmetries on this level is like Witt plus Witt. Yeah.
Why does the En bar have a higher order derivative, but En just has a first order derivative for all n?
You mean you here higher order derivative?
En bar has like.
Yes. Oh, like this. It's just vector field. Sorry, it was it was typo. Mm-hmm. And there is very important subalgebra. So inside of Witt algebra, there is SO2 algebra. Do you know what is SO2 algebra? Okay, then who knows where is this SO2? Some suggestions? Just looking at this relation, for example. So first of all, we want to have some closed algebra. The algebra commuting whose generators we cannot get outside of the algebra. And if we take ln and lm with higher n and m, for example, let n be equal to 5 and m equal to 5. Here we have like l 5 plus 5, which means l 10. So like we are going higher and higher and higher, and indices are growing and growing and growing. So probably we don't want to have ln and lm with very big indices. And we want to have only three generators because SO2 have only three generators. So
minus 1, 0, 1.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. So this SO2 is spanned by L minus 1, L 0, and L 1. And yeah, it's easy to see that if you take L minus 1, L 0, we are getting minus L minus 1. If you are taking L 1 and L 0, we are getting L 1, right? And if you are taking L minus 1, L 1, we are getting minus 2, L 0. So L0 is like minus h, L minus 1 like f, and L1 like e. I guess. Yeah, something like that. Probably up to some minor changes. And it's very easy to recognize this vector field. So let's use the definition. So L minus 1 is minus d over dz, which are translations. L1 is minus z d, L0 is minus z d over dz, which are dilatations and rotations. And so what does it mean, dilatations and rotations? So if we want to have real algebra which preserves our real plane, so like the algebra of transformations which we had before, it was preserving the real plane. It was not breaking consistency between z and z bar. And now we consider only half of the algebra, so we consider only homomorphic part. And to construct vector fields which preserve the real plane, so which preserve this condition that z complex conjugate is equal to z bar, we need to consider only like vector fields like preserve real plane ln plus ln bar and I ln minus ln bar. So only vector fields of this form preserve real plane, and or they are linear combinations with real coefficients, not complex coefficients, but real coefficients. Otherwise, the real plane is not preserved. And here we only deal with like half of the algebra, so we don't care much about preserving the real plane, and therefore it's very hard to distinguish dilatations from rotations. Dilatations and rotations are corresponding combinations of homomorphic and anti-homomorphic generators, but both of these generators are linear in Z, like the coordinates of vector field are linear in Z. And we also have Z1, which corresponds to vector field Z squared d over dz, which correspond to special conformal transformations, which are quadratic in Z. Good? Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. I don't know, should I? Yeah, probably I can do it. No. Okay, now let's go to transformations of fields. So we described how our algebra is organized, and now we want to understand, since this is the algebra of symmetries of quantum field series, we need to understand first how fields are transforming under the algebra. The two indices which are labeling fields in any dimensions are like Lorentz, how they transform, like Lorentz representations, so how they're transforming under the Lorentz group or group of Euclidean rotations if you are working in Euclid, and dilatation index, as Jaume explained to us. So who are rotations and who are dilatations in 2D? So in 2D, rotations are just SO2, or what's the same, it's like called U1. it's complex form of the same group. So basically, those are just like local rotations of the plane. And under this group, coordinates get mapped like z to e to I phi z. Z bar goes to e minus I phi to z bar. And the corresponding label of representation is spin S, and like in most like common physical theories, spin is like half integral number, so it's like either like 1/2, 2/2, like 3/2, this kind of values. But also in 2D, you can often encounter theories where it's just complex number. And these kind of particles which have non-integral or non-half integral spins, they're called anions or sometimes parafermions. And yeah, they play a very important role in modern physics, and we will discuss this kind of fields in the following. For example, yeah, anions in 2D is one of hopes to build universal quantum computer. If we have anions in 2D, physical anions in 2D, then we can build universal topological quantum computer. But so far, we don't have access to them. And so the fields transforming as like this. So there is just, yeah, as it's consistent with the rules which we had before on the previous lectures. And dilatations, they are the same in any dimension. So this is just like group which is like r greater than zero of positive real numbers, and z goes to e to sigma z bar goes to e to sigma z bar, where sigma is a real number, and the corresponding label of representation is scaling dimension which is called delta, and which is in general just real number. Yeah, and yes. And the corresponding transformation of fields is phi e to sigma z bar equals to e to minus sigma delta phi of z z bar. Okay. So now we can kind of define that quasi-primary fields. Are those which transform S phi. Phi of omega W of Z W bar of Z bar equals to d omega dz minus h d W bar over dz bar minus h bar phi of Z bar, where W of Z global, it's important here that it's global conformal transformation. And H is equals to 1/2 delta plus S, and H bar equals to 1/2 delta minus S. Those are called conformal weights. Of the corresponding field. So basically, we rewritten down the same formulas which we had here, but in terms of like complex coordinates in a more fancy way. But notice that we have quasi here and global here. So we didn't specify how these fields are transforming under all the other conformal transformations, which are not global, but which are local. So, you know, this is kind of definition. I don't know if I'm allowed to give definitions on lectures in theoretical physics because it's not mathematics, but I will do. And like primary fields, those which transform like in the same way, basically. But under all conformal transformations. So here it doesn't matter if this is like, and as I promised you before, I'm not going to use all the other conformal transformations as global transformations, so as a mapping of the whole plane, but only in infinitesimal form. And I will be using this formula only in infinitesimal form. And in infinitesimal form, delta epsilon bar, so let's say that Z, so W equals to Z plus epsilon of Z, so infinitesimally. W is Z plus epsilon of Z. And in this case, delta epsilon bar of phi, by definition, it's phi tilde of Z minus phi of Z. And this is equal to minus H dz epsilon plus epsilon dz phi minus h bar dz bar epsilon bar plus epsilon bar dz bar phi. So this is just expansion of this transformation. But here it's important that epsilon is not only 1 z and z square, like we had in the case of global conformal transformations, but epsilon is any analytic function in the plane. Okay, remark. And now two remarks. So first remark is that there are fields which quasi-primary but not primary. for example, stress energy tensor. So, and this is a field which exists in any two-dimensional conformal theory, and this is more or less definition of two-dimensional conformal theory. And stress energy tensor transforms in this way under global conformal transformations. But when you are trying to apply local conformal transformations, you see that there is some extra term. So the transformation rule is not as simple as this one. And second remark, if we take a look at these formulas, we can like think that dW over dz, it's equal, it's stupid thing, but it's equal to dW over dz absolute value times e to I argument of dW over dz. So we can think that this is like local scaling factor. And this is a local rotation. So we can think that primary field is a field which like transforms as a primary, like as a quasi-primary, but now like locally also. So in each neighborhood, we look how this neighborhood is mapped under conformal transformation, and we keep track of how it gets rescaled, like the neighborhood that gets rescaled and get rotated, and the field responds to this mapping like a primary field.
For quasi-primary field?
Sorry?
This doesn't hold for quasi-primary field?
Yes, for quasi... I mean, this holds for any field, but for a quasi-primary field under a transformation which is not global but local, it can respond in a weird way like to local transformations. Not as primary, but with some other like extra factors. For example, here, like if we take a look like at local properties, there might be, here we have like first derivative of epsilon and zero derivative of epsilon. For stress energy tensor, for example, there is also second derivative of epsilon. So it doesn't respond like primary field, which gets like locally rescaled and locally rotated. There are like some extra response.
So intuitively, you have high derivatives, like in the same way that, right? You have high derivatives of...
Yeah, I think it's a good way to think that you have higher derivatives response here, yes. But it's not like you have higher derivatives in epsilon. It's not like, so this is still vector field which is acting on quantum fields. But yeah, I think the best way is to memorize it. You can have higher derivatives of epsilon in this expansion.
Mm-hmm. I think I missed the last remark. Can you go over it again? Like, what did you write at the bottom? The omega dz was that?
Yeah, so the remark is... so we discussed here that like we have global transformations, which are like global rotation and global dilatation. And quasi-primary field is a field which responds to rotation as a field which has some spin, and to dilatations as a field which has some scaling dimension. The last remark was that primary fields, not quasi-primary, but primary, they're the fields which respond to the same way, but not only for global rotations and global dilatations, but like to local transformations, which can be only locally represented as dilatation factor and some rotation factor.
The argument of the exponential is what I can
release? It's argument of dW over dz. So I just decomposed complex numbers, so local, this like local Jacobian of transformation, it can be locally represented as absolute value, which is scaling factor, and as like some rotation factor. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a very minor point, but so here W we allow to be locally homomorphic, but when the case of primary fields.
Yes.
But it could also be singular at some points on the complex plane, right?
So I will be treating, so as I promised, I'm not going to treat this as a global function, like as a function which defines some mapping of a plane. I only treat it like as infinitesimal transformation. So I assume that like in front of epsilon here, so I always use only this expansion, and I assume that here we have some very small factor. And epsilon, for purposes of conformal field theories, we should not, like, we should not care about convergent properties of this epsilon, basically. So I don't even care if epsilon is convergent, some like current, some convergent expansion in Z, or it's not convergent. So basically, it can be like any formal expansion in positive and negative powers of Z. But this is like, to take care of these kind of things, it's better to go to mathematicians and study theory of vertex algebras, and they care about like expansion in one direction, in another direction, convergent, non-convergent. But I will be not talking much about that. Okay?
So for our purposes, those transformations are, whenever they're valid, they're applicable. Like essentially away from
yes,
places.
I like this phrasing. Whenever they're valid, they're applicable. This is a great definition. I like this. Yeah. So like for in most cases, our epsilon will be just z to the power of n. So we will be not dealing with like complicated transformation, but we will consider only like basic ones and commutators of those. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I still have 15 minutes. And, right? 10 minutes, okay. So I will not manage to tell all what I wanted to, but I can start with Noether theorem. So, Jaume very briefly touched this topic, and we also discussed it on the first tutorial. But to apply the whole power to dimensional conformal theories, we need to understand well how symmetry under conformal transformations restricts our correlation functions. So whenever we have, I will also be brief, but I will try to give some understanding. So when we have global symmetry, we have some transformation rule that phi tilde of x tilde is equal to some functional of phi of x, and x tilde equals to some x tilde of x. So this is some like kind of transformation, or infinitesimally, this gives delta omega, which equals of phi, which equals phi tilde of x minus phi of x equals minus on I w g of phi of x, where g is called generator of transformation, and it's easy to see that I g phi equals to delta x mu over delta omega d mu phi minus this factor. So we have some group of transformations, and we have algebra of transformations given by local transformations. So symmetry means that action of transformed field of X is equal to action of field before the transformation. This is definition of symmetry. If action is invariant under transformation, then this is a symmetry. Infinitesimally, the same can be written that like action of phi of x minus I omega g phi minus action of phi of x. This is some expansion of order of omega square. So infinitesimally, in this expansion, we will not have terms which are linear in omega. So linear term vanishes. And yeah, we only care about linear because infinitesimally here we also only keep linear term. Okay. So how to derive Noether current? assume this is kind of trick, but this is like very helpful trick. Probably that's the best way to derive Noether theorem which I know. So assume that omega is function of x now. And in a spirit, it's very similar to derivation of like stress energy tensor from metric. So we assume for a second that metric is not constant, but it's some function. And then we are taking variation with respect to this metric and then set metric to be like diagonal metric again. So we are doing similar trick, but in more general setup. In this case, we know that, so we just take the same expansion as here. And we know that like S of phi of x minus I omega g phi minus S of phi of x. This difference, it would be proportional to minus integral d dx times j mu times, or it's probably to use higher index, times d mu omega. And this works in case if Lagrangian contains only phi and first derivatives of phi. If there are higher derivatives on phi, it might be a bit more tricky. But in this case, that's totally true. And why I can assume this? So without any knowledge of what this j is, I can a priori tell this because I know that if omega is not function of x, so here omega is function of x. If omega is not function of x, there should be no term linear in omega. So there is something like O of omega square, which we don't care about. But we know that like this is a symmetry of series. So if omega is constant, there are no extra linear term here. So what kind of function can be vanishing when omega is constant? It's some derivative of omega. And we cannot have higher derivatives of omega because L doesn't contain higher derivatives of phi. This is like something which you can think about. So this is just a priori expression, like without any knowledge, we can tell that this will be the form. On the other hand, the least action principle it tells us that under any variation of fields, S of phi plus delta phi minus S of phi should be O of delta phi squared. So it should be, there is no linear term here. But it works on shell. On shell means on equations of motions. So if equations of motions are of motion are satisfied, then there is no linear term here. And from these two, so from these two statements, or for this observation, second this observation, it immediately follows that on shell we should not have any terms here. And this should follow from equations of motion. So integral over d dx j mu d mu omega omega of x should be equal to zero. And this is true for any omega. Because like even more generally, like for any variation of the field, this difference should be vanishing on shell. And this is like just particular case when we have this kind of variation of field. So for any omega, this should vanish. So integrating by parts now and assuming that, sorry, there is mu here. Integrating by parts and assuming that current is decreasing at infinity as usually in this kind of computations, this is the same as d dx, here is minus d mu j mu times omega of x. And since this is vanishing for any omega of x, this means that divergence of current equals to zero. So this is a conserved neutral current. Probably it's not like we will not use this in the following, but just I cannot resist writing down this formula. So general expression for our current in terms of data which we have before is dl over d mu phi times d nu phi minus delta mu nu l. And here you can recognize stress energy tensor d omega minus dl over d mu phi times delta f or delta phi. So this is Noether's theorem in the field theory. So we use data which we had before in the definition of transformation. We have variation of coordinate under infinitesimal transformation and variation of fields under infinitesimal transformations. Any questions on Noether's theorem? So the good exercise after this lecture, I know that like you're not supposed to like do exercises outside of tutorial, but if you're interested, the good exercise is to derive this expression from what I explained above. So basically, you have to take this expression and you have to compute the expansion of your field. So on the following lecture, we will apply Noether's theorem and for conformal symmetries in two dimensions, but for the quantum theory. So I will tell you about so-called word identities and how they restrict the theory. Yeah, I think that's it. Yes.
Yeah, all this is classical, right?
Yes, so far this was classical, and this was also classical, yes.
Can we care about primary fields? Because after we quantize it, Jolma says that like primary operators are the lowest weight states, right?
Higher weight states, but yes. Mm-hmm.
Higher?
I mean, it doesn't matter, it's just a matter of convention. Yes, they will course. So when we will quantize, that vector field, so we will have some anomaly and we will have central extension, Jolma mentioned that. And we'll have some huge algebra, and primary fields will be higher vector states for this algebra. And using power of the algebra, we can constrain like basically everything in the theory.
Mm-hmm. So in the definition of quasi-primary and primary field, shouldn't there be like phi tilde on the left-hand side?
Probably you're right. Yes, I think you're right. Sorry, you're right. Yes. Phi tilde of transformed coordinates, prefactor. Yes, you're right. Sorry. Yes.
How do I naively looking at the conformal algebra? It's kind of surprising that I only need two numbers to specify the representation.
Good question. It's like, I mean, we will see it when we will have the algebra. So you can recognize this from looking at algebra. Did you have like on Lie algebra something bigger than SL2, like SL3 or SU3? Did you discuss SU3 symmetry anytime, like on particle physics, on mathematical physics? There is like important mantra, or like, I don't know, it's like it can be proved mathematically, but this can be taken as mantra. So typically Lie algebras, they have a form, like they have Cartan decomposition. So if you have Lie algebra G, typically you have some nilpotent positive part plus Cartan part plus nilpotent negative part. And in case of SLN, for example, this part is higher upper triangular matrices. And this is lower triangular And this is diagonal. Okay? And this is it's called Cartan decomposition, and it's important that this matrix is there nilpotent, which means that if you take this algebra and compute commutant of algebra with itself, n plus, if you take commutator, it's strictly contained in n plus, so it's smaller than n plus. And in principle, if you repeat this for a couple of times, you get nothing. So it's like it's nilpotent. After some commutator, the whole algebra vanishes. And this diagonal part, its main feature is that it's commutative. So this commutator is zero. And to understand how many parameters do you need to classify your representations, you need to take a look at Cartan subalgebra to diagonal matrices. And number of numbers which you need to label your representations is number of generators in Cartan subalgebra. And for example, for SL2, this is only one number. You have one diagonal matrix with 1 minus 1 on diagonal. For SU3, you need two numbers. And this corresponds to like in QCD, you have like two numbers which are labeling your like quarks or whatever you have. Whatever particles you have, you can draw them on a plane. In case of weak algebra and more generally Virasoro algebra, we have only one generator which is like commuting with each other. So we have like for weak algebra, our n plus is spanned by ln with n greater than zero, n minus is spanned by ln with n smaller than zero, and Cartan part is just L0. It's only one generator. So our representations are labeled by one number, but we also have second copy of weak algebra. We have one copy for holomorphic and one for anti-holomorphic fields. Therefore, we need two numbers. Okay, yeah, great question, thank you. Okay, then see you tomorrow.